They would have had us disown our government and our way of life, I'm sure.
The first night I was there, I was put in irons, and after about 30 minutes, I asked them to take me out.
Colonel Caddis
acceded to my request, and I began to lie to them. And about 6 hours later, they came in and told me they recognized that I was lying, and therefore they would punish me again. And the next time they punished me, I lost consciousness. And when I recovered consciousness, I had lost the use of my hands and arms, and I was unable to stand erect. It took me almost 8 months to recover from that. They gave me medical treatment about 1 month after they tortured me. I was tortured a total of 4 times within the first 48 hours. The leg irons were put on. One time I sat for 8 hours as the pain slowly came up my legs into my torso.
And in 1967, I was tortured for 3 months.
Colonel Cherry.
92 days, which I spent in irons, ropes, and being beat about 5 times a day. And that was the worst actual physical torture.
They beat me on both sides of my face. It was determined
Colonel Ramsey.
They couldn't hit me hard enough with their left hands, so they concentrated with their right hands. By the time they were finished, I was bleeding from my left side, and all my left side of my face and head was blown up, and my eyes were closed. My left eye was closed.
The higher ranking officers definitely suffered the worst treatment, torture-wise. I personally received a broken rib and a punctured lung out of one session.
Colonel Cherry, in their psychological harassment of you, did the North Vietnamese ever seek to exploit your race?
Yes, but I did not receive any direct physical punishment because of my race that I am aware of. However, I was constantly interrogated and given information about things in the United States that they know that I would not be satisfied with, and that would try to affect me mentally. Yes, this was constant.
At the end of 1,000 days of solitary confinement, I felt somewhat like an animal. I was reduced, I think, to the very lowest depths that a person can reach. I was very depressed. At the time, I weighed about 115 pounds, and I weighed on a set of scales, so I know how much I weighed. And I had been that way for over 2 years, very much depressed. And then in late 1969, in October, apparently there was a change in the policy toward our treatment, and things began to get better, and I got better.
The North Vietnamese had additional troubles with Lieutenant Colonel John Dramisi. Nearly 6 years a prisoner, twice he escaped, but was eventually caught, and as he told correspondent Hal Walker, the torture was increased.
There was also a time when they would pull my hair back and pound me with the palms of their hands on the top of the face. Then I went through the ropes a number of times. When I say going through the ropes, it was the manner in which I described. That is, this hammer-like hammerlock affair in which they brought the rope over my shoulder, around the irons, and attempted to draw my arms up over my head. After that happened, after that sequence of events, I moved to the Hanoi Hilton. In room 18, which was referred to as the torture room, the hook room, because they had a hook on the ceiling. It was called the show room because it was expected that you would perform in that room, the blue room, and a number of other names such as that. It was room 18. It was, the infamous room 18 in the Hanoi Hilton. As soon as I arrived there, well, I might mention, just going back, at the time I was recaptured, they reduced my food and water to a cup of water and a small piece of bread twice a day. This lasted approximately 30 days. When I finally got to room 18, then they introduced me, or not introduced me to them, because I had previously worn the jumbo irons. They again put the jumbo irons on. and they put me on a stool. My arms were now tied behind my back in that fashion I told you before. And for the next, approximately for the next 30 days, they attempted to not only keep me awake, reduce my food, but I also at that time was going through the ropes, through the ropes again, and as I described. The weight of the irons, these jumbo irons that I described, was such that eventually my feet began to blow up and become infected. They looked like elephant's feet with little toes sticking out the end. I remember at times a guard would come in and he would squat in front of me as I was tied up in the manner that I described, with the lights showing on in my face. This was after the interrogators left. He would sit there and knock mosquitoes that were bloating themselves with my blood from my blown up feet. And as they fell to the ground, he would give out with a little giggle and squash the mosquitoes that were that were blown up from my my blood. This went on for approximately 2 weeks until one day when I was forced to stand up and my feet were burning, the interrogator told me that I was going to stand there for the rest of the day, and at this time I collapsed. The next day, they came into the room and took those jumbo irons off and bandaged my feet. The reason they had to bandage my feet is because I still wear the scars today from those irons. They had eaten into my ankles, so that when they came off, they were able to extract the dead tissue from the holes that were in my that were bored by these irons into my ankles.
Colonel Robinson Reisner was under constant torture, 4 years in solitary confinement. He fully understands why prisoners broke and why there were some internal problems in prison camps.
They degraded us, trying to humiliate us, and so forth. We were living in these conditions 24 hours a day, and we were not even permitted out of our cells to exercise until about October of 1969. So under these conditions, I think it is only natural to expect there will be sometimes a flare-up of temper, perhaps a heated discussion and so forth, but I'm not aware of even a fist fight. And we used to laugh and talk about the fact when we were sitting in the room, and remember, we had no toilets. We had only a 2-gallon bucket with a very sharp rim on it. And this is what we had to use. There was no privacy. We used to laugh. One would be sitting there, maybe eating his food, and another one would be sitting right in front of him and relieving himself. We used to say, what marriage could endure this?
At least one POW has said today that he's not worried about filing charges against fellow POWs. But what he is going to do is begin charges against the North Vietnamese for war crimes. Are you inclined to pursue that?
No, I am not. Perhaps it's because of my religious belief. I believe very strongly in God and in Jesus Christ's teachings. And I remember in the Bible, and I can't quote the scripture, but it says, pray for those that despitefully use you and do good to those that persecute you. Understand, I will take a life for the protection of my country as I have in the past, and I will do it again if necessary. But after the war is over, I feel no hatred for the enemy. I'll do the job, but I will leave it to my government to decide whether or not the North Vietnamese has committed war crimes.
More of today's prison stories in a couple of minutes.
It was hung to the point that I almost lost consciousness. My feet were just about clear of the floor, and the rope had tightened very definitely around my neck. I was cinched up, as Captain Denton explained, and kicked around quite a bit.
In 1969, long after the bombing stopped, I received what I considered a very brutal beating over a period of 2 weeks. To deprive without sleep, 7 days, seven nights.
Commander McDaniel.
Healing on open wounds from early morning to late in the evening, and sitting on a stool in leg irons at night. I was beaten countless times in that 14 days, many times losing consciousness, primarily of information which I did not have. However, So much. I was beaten with a fan belt about this long, and on the end, had little knots tied to get a better grip. They would have two guards, one on one side and one on the other side. And I was beaten on one occasion well over 100 times, and over a period of 2 weeks, I would estimate probably between 600 and 700 times.
Major McDaniel was asked about special treatment of blacks.
Well, very briefly, there were many attempts, especially with myself and the other blacks there, to have us side with their cause and with them. They tried to play up to us and create dissension among the blacks and the whites. However, it was definitely ineffective.
Navy Captain James Stockdale was shot down in 1965. He was at the news conference in San Antonio. Bill Walker reports.
Captain James Stockdale, soon to be Admiral Stockdale, was the senior naval officer among the POWs. He was shot down in September of 1965 while on a bombing mission over North Vietnam. According to Stockdale's fellow prisoners, he spent the next 7.5 years organizing and maintaining a command structure among the POWs, a chain of command that's being credited with maintaining morale and discipline.
First point I want to make is that at no time when we were in North Vietnam were we treated as prisoners of war. The Geneva Conventions of 1949, notwithstanding, we were, in the eyes and words of the captors, criminals. The net product that our captors wanted was propaganda. And they went about it methodically, somewhat as follows. They would put a person in solitary confinement, and they would accompany this with a set of camp regulations, so-called. These camp regulations clearly did not meet the Geneva Conventions of 1949 treatment regime. They said things like, you are forbidden to communicate with other criminals. You will answer all questions asked of your interrogators, and so on and so forth, and usually ended by saying that those who are compliant will be given special favors, and those who resist will be punished. A mighty good man can be reduced to irrationality in an hour of carefully applied pain, and the pain is so expertly applied that it need not and usually does not leave scars. The basic mode of, the sort of the primary mode of torture is to reeve what were first manila lines and later nylon straps about the prisoner's arms as he's seated on the concrete, and then his arms are pulled up behind him. He usually has a heavy iron bar attached to his ankles with lugs. Then the straps are reeved around his neck and down under his feet. And then this torture guard, who is usually rather expert, the particular ones we identified as such, then amidst an atmosphere of excitement and abandon, or at least implied abandon on the part of the enemy, then these ropes are tightened and pulled. And the man that is doing the torturer often stands on the torturee's back. Now, the first thing that happens is that the ropes are so reeved that it shuts off the blood circulation in your lower arms. And then your head is forced down to give you the feeling of claustrophobia, sort of in the position of the baby sucking his big toe. So this is a rather athletic operation done by experts. And hour to 2 hours is a good time frame for most of them.
Stockdale summed up Hanoi's treatment of U.S. prisoners of war as pressurized extortion at its worst and indifference to the POW's needs at best. Bill Walker, CBS News, San Diego.
More of the prisoner's story shortly.
to myself. I was
Commander Alvarez
in Hanoi initially. I was in complete isolation. Initially, I was not physically tortured. I was under extreme duress, mental duress, and their interrogation period, initial interrogation period, lasted 6 weeks.
What happened during that period, Commander?
Just constant questioning.
Were you tortured?
Yes, definitely so.
In what way?
Both physical and mental torture. 5 years in solitary confinement.
Major Thompson.
Physical torture was applied on several occasions. Beatings. My arms tied behind my back, strung over a rafter on the ceiling. I was strangled at one point, beaten with hands, fists, forced to bow to Vietnamese cadre by being kicked in the belly, my head smashed on the ground.
Major, did they break very many people in POW camps?
I have no idea. I know what they did to me.
Did they break you, Major, in any way, shape, or form?
I was forced to sign a statement against my will. This is true. But I don't consider this being broken because my spirit is never broken. My attitude has never changed. None of us signed those statements voluntarily. The only ones that were signed, to the best of my knowledge, were ones that were forced to sign them. And I would elaborate on the statement that was asked by the gentleman over on the right here, that none of us did this willingly. It was a matter of getting down to the point where it was death staring you in the face, and it was either die or sign it. And the attitude, I feel, was that these propaganda statements just weren't worth dying over. I think that I can say with complete assurance that there are three faiths. One, faith in God. Two, faith in country. Three, faith in the love of a good woman. And it is these three things that saw me safely through.
Still more after this. In Los Angeles.
Navy Lieutenant David Raymond had undergone long periods of isolation and torture before he agreed to communist demands that he be filmed. The treatment was the worst, he said, between 1966 and 1969. We asked him this afternoon about the limits of endurance that he and the other men had.
Well, there was always the threat of physical torture. I learned that very quickly when I got to Hanoi. And I remember sitting in my cell block many times, and when it wasn't a scheduled event to occur, and you heard the keys rattling by the turnkey who open the doors, you would begin to just break into a cold sweat for fear that he was coming to your room to take you out for an interrogation.
When they did take you from your cell, from your dungeon, as you describe it, what were some of the things that they did? What were some of the pressures that they put you under?
It was amazing. I was under pressure for 7 weeks to write a statement about how humane the treatment was, and that's rather ironic. You'll find that some people went under extreme pressures for various things, depending on how you would react to their initial push for this, as to how much they were going to push you for that.
Did you write the statement?
Oh, yes. You learn to write statements whether you wanted to or not.
Were there times when you did not think you'd make it?
There were times when I thought I wouldn't make it. But I was gritting my teeth saying, I'm not going to let them do it to me. I'm not going to let them bury me here in Hanoi.
Not all men who were there, we are beginning to learn now, behaved as you did inside the camps. What was the range of tolerance of men and behavior?
Well, I find myself basically an understanding individual, I think. Not all of us have the same breaking point. What might be torture for one man may be nothing for another. I know of some guys who probably didn't resist as much as I would have under their circumstances, but I cannot condemn or condone, and I won't.
Lynchburg, Virginia honored Staff Sergeant David Harker religiously. Martin Dean was there.
Catholic Mass with some modern touches to honor David Harker, an Army Staff Sergeant, 22 years old when he was captured, then 3 years a prisoner in South Vietnam, 2 years more spent in North Vietnam.
Thank you all.
Joining David in the chapel and at the party afterwards, a group of Lynchburg High School students and Sergeant Harker's father always at his side.
Quite a bit. What is the most absurd question you've been asked since you've been back here?
I was on two-way talk radio the other day, and some little kid called up and he asked if I had TVs in my cell.
Few memories more vivid than the food that was not available, the hunger, starvation, malnutrition, and death, especially during the long march through the South Vietnam jungles to Hanoi.
My hands were tied behind me. I was duck-winged with commo wire, and all circulation was cut off in my arms. And they walked me that night like that. My arms swelled. I lost all feeling in my hands and my arms, below my elbows. And I was forced to walk like that. It was very painful for me. I'm very indebted to my first sergeant. He kept me moving and kept him from, I guess, I don't know what they would have done with me, beat me or executed me or something if I wouldn't have been able to move. It was very painful.
Was there a marked difference between what occurred when you were in the South and what happened when you were finally marched north?
Yes, sir. There was quite a bit of difference in treatment. In South Vietnam, we experienced very many difficulties. We went hungry all the time. All the time we went to bed starved. And we'd get up from a meal hungry because they weren't able to provide food for us. We ate a little bowl of rice for a meal. And along with that, we had some potatoes called a manioc, which was a staple. We had a lot of malnutrition. Everybody was malnourished. And as a result of that, many people died. We had quite a few that died in that camp. When we arrived north, they did have a little protein in our diet. But medicine improved also, and medical care. They did have a little better medical facilities, and they did treat us, you know, there. But in the South, they had nothing, as I said.
Was there anything that would pass as torture at any time other than when you attempted to escape?
Yes. There was physical force used on us to make us write anti-war statements, and we were most of the people in my camp, I myself, was forced. The last time any pressure was brought on me was in April of 1972, right after the bombing stopped, and I had to make a statement then. It was, we made some type of effort to disassociate ourselves with the anti-war group that was in our camp, and they were trying to force us to associate with them, and we refused, and I was punished for that. I was beaten.
More in a couple of minutes. By David Dick.
I was physically forced and tortured to write a confessions of crime, scribble on and tape it.
Captain James Mulligan.
First captured.
Mulligan.
How were you forced?
The use of ropes on my hands, on my cut-off circulation. They threatened our families, made many threats against my family when I was over there, when I refused to do things for them.
What did they say?
They said that they had people who could take care of my family back in the United States. I know what they were talking about.
Did they threaten your life?
Oh, of course, many times they used to say, you will die here. So I said, what else is new? I always figured I'd get out when the war ended.
You say that you were forced to sign some statements. How much should a prisoner have to endure before he gives in?
Well, I suppose that varies from individual to individual and the type of physical force that's used.
But I think that for the most part, everyone went to, as far as they could, really. And they finally break you. I was, in 1969, January 25th of 69, the Vietnamese became very serious about a new project. They thought that there was going to be a settlement of the a settlement of the war, and so they wanted to have somebody handy who was ready to be stuck out in the open, and who would beg the forgiveness of the Vietnamese. And I was one of the guys selected, and I was forced to write a letter of requesting amnesty, requesting the forgiveness of the Vietnamese people and the venerable Ho Chi Minh. Well, what they did to me was very interesting. They stood me against the wall for some hours with my arms over my head, and then they got serious, and then they put irons on me, and they beat me up for several hours. And then they got real serious, and then they added ropes to my wrist and my arms, and they roped me. It just worked on me, and after being in overnight, they broke me sufficiently that I couldn't resist anymore, and I wrote a letter of requesting amnesty, exactly like they wanted me to. And they gave me the heading and they gave me the words, and I put it down because I could not take it anymore.
And your treatment after that, after you had signed it?
Well, my treatment was bad because they worked me for the better part of a week, and they roped me, and during that week's period, I was roped six different times for six different things. And each time I went as far as I could, and I couldn't last anymore, and I gave in, and the next day they'd come back again. I was sure glad they didn't come back the seventh day, because at that stage of the game, if they came in, I think I might have just given to them. I don't know. I was just about broken good, but they didn't come back. And of course, I, like most of the prisoners who've been roped or beaten, I've got the scars, physical and mental, to show for. How much can you take? I don't know. You show me a man who says, well, they won't break me. I wouldn't give them anything. Well, I think they just don't understand the problem. You see, you want to die, but they won't let you. And they got many ways, and they got lots of time. And you can hang in there, but they'll win. And I don't know anyone that they didn't, they weren't able to get essentially what they wanted when they worked them long enough.
Major Robert Jeffrey of the Air Force spent more than 7 years in prison in North Vietnam. There were times he said he thought he would die. Once, after trying to escape, he was put in front of a firing squad. After another try, he was tortured.
The interpreter was still there, standing at my side, and he told me I had 2 minutes in which to tell them what they wanted to know. He gave me a countdown. Every half minute, he would tell me how much time I had left and ask me if I was ready to talk. Each time, I refused. At the end of the 2 minutes, he told me that my time was up and that this was my last chance. I still refused. The firing squad fired over my head, and that was the end of that incident. They tied the ropes around the center of my upper arms and forced my shoulder blades together, cutting off the circulation in my arms. The interrogator asked me the same questions again, and I refused. He would leave for 15 to 20 minutes and come back and ask me again. Upon each refusal, they would tighten the ropes tighter, cutting off the circulation, until I had lost complete feeling in my arms from the ropes down.
Master Sergeant Harvey Brand of the Army was captured in the Tet Offensive of 1968. He was at a news conference in San Antonio today.
I was beaten on many occasions. I underwent some torture.
Why?
Failure to give anything but name, rank, service number, did it. Normally it was sticking bamboo sticks in my wounds. After two escape attempts, I was incapacitated to the point that I could not walk for 14 months. And they carried me. The first escape attempt was just south of Long Bay, Special Forces Camp, where I was captured.
Where was that?
Just about 5 miles west of Khe Sanh. in northern Iowa. They were taking me down to execute me. I made a break for it and ran into the outer security and was recaptured. I was wounded. A responsible North Vietnamese officer ordered that I be taken to a prisoner of war camp in Laos. I was force marched from there approximately 30 kilometers into Laos. I stayed there in that prisoner of war camp for 9 days. They refused to give me any food or medicine. The other prisoners of war in the camp, which were Vietnamese and Laotian, were slipping food to me. That was on the 18th of February. A Sergeant Dennis Thompson from Portland, Oregon, and I, he was also captured in the same battle. And we escaped from the...